just notes this evening. Writing a full lecture proved to be beyond me. So I'd like to talk tonight about radical acceptance, which is something I've made up. I haven't made up radical acceptance, I've just made up giving it that name. When we practice the Buddha's teaching, we're practicing radical acceptance. There was a question in the box from the last Q&A, which I didn't answer. And the question is, there are lots of things to be fearful and anxious about in the world at the moment. How can we lessen these feelings? And the answer is radical acceptance. You're welcome. Now you want more, don't you? I can tell. Radical acceptance. It reminded me of a quote from one of my favorite books written by Frank Herbert, Dune, and his litany against fear. So I'd like to read that out for you. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. When the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. Okay, is that enough? I don't think any of us, I think you would have to have, you would have to be made of stone not to experience fear in the world currently. There are so many existential threats, the latest one being war in Europe, which we're having to get used to and having to get used to seeing all these terrible images of what's going on. And of course, as practicing Buddhist meditators, compassion, hopefully compassion arises. And hopefully in response to what we see, it generates a desire to walk the Buddhist path to freedom from suffering. Because there's no doubt that when we see what we see on the television, the first two of the Buddha's Four Noble Truths ring out clearly. Suffering arises from the passionate craving for life to be different than it is. The passionate desire for life to be different than it is creates more suffering. Perceiving that suffering creates the desire for life to be different than it is. So it goes on endlessly, it appears. And some may ask why it is that human beings never seem to learn the lesson. Why this sort of thing keeps on repeating. Maybe through the course of tonight's talk, we might get to understand a little bit why that appears to be so. So hold that question in mind. Why do we never appear to learn? So, what is fear? Fear is the response to perceived threat, isn't it? Those threats can take many forms, and it appears there's a close correlation between fear and desire. So often it's the case that the things that you desire, the fear of not gaining the things that you desire, or the things that you desire going away again, or somebody else getting to the things that you desire before you, can all produce a sense of fear, but it's all a perceived threat. The threats can be manifold, depending on what your desires are. Your desire might be for prestige. Your desires might be for security. And because you hold those desires, those needs, you will inevitably see threats to those. That's kind of life, how life works, unfortunately. So the more attachment there is, the more fear there is. And so we see this process of the cycling of the fear and the response to the fear. So in the world, we see somebody sees a potential threat and they feel that they have to respond to that threat, and they respond through fear. So they perceive threat and they feel that they have to push back against that threat. What does that produce in the person who is the subject of that pushing back? They see that not as a defensive mechanism, they see that as an aggression. And how does that make them feel? It makes them feel threatened, and therefore they become frightened, and the fear causes them to push back, which is seen as aggressive. And round and round, on it goes, escalating out of control. And we see that. We're witness to that. We're witness to the insecurity of it, the existential threat of it. And what do we experience? We experience fear. The response to the perceived threat. What do we want to do? We want to push back. So the cycle continues. So how do we break the cycle of fear and response? Through radical acceptance. And the Buddha's teaching is a teaching on radical acceptance. Through learning how to accept that life is the way it is and is not actually wrong, through eliminating the ignorance that causes the misperceptions, you come to a deep abiding acceptance of life as it is, and as a consequence, you don't resist, you don't crave for life to be different than it is, and you don't suffer. So the answer to the question, there are lots of things to be fearful and anxious about in the world at the moment, how can we lessen these feelings? It's to follow the Noble Eightfold Path to its conclusion. So we need to define a few terms. What do we mean by radical? What do we mean by acceptance? Well, by acceptance, really I mean non-resistance to reality. So there is a flow to life, and we want to allow the freedom for reality to unfold spontaneously and naturally. When we're doing that, we're not suffering. When we are passionately desiring life to be different than it is, whether it's fear or some other inefficient behavior, then we are interfering with that natural flow, and that's when we're suffering. So that's what I mean by acceptance. It's accepting that life is as it is, and we know that the process of meditation and walking the Noble Eightfold Path is about learning more and more about that flow, learning not to interfere, but to allow that flow. What do I mean by radical? I know that was a bit you were waiting for. Firstly, I mean it in the sense of actually making a difference. Because there's lots of what are purported to be radical things in the world which are not radical at all, because they don't actually make a difference. It just, what they do just perpetuates suffering. So that's not radical. They might call it radical, but that doesn't mean it's actually radical. So when I use the word radical, I mean that which actually makes a difference. I also mean it in the sense of going against the received wisdom, especially the received spiritual wisdom. So how often is it that we come to meditation, come to the practice, and discover that what we thought was the way forward is actually paradoxically completely not the way forward, and it was actually the way we didn't think was the way forward transpires to be the way forward. For instance, like learning to accept fear. I've got an example of a non-radical, non-acceptance for you, just to give you the whole picture. There was a, and this isn't meant as a slight towards the person at all, but there was somebody, an American actress, who wrote a poem which was posted online and went viral when the war began. And it was talking about how Well, firstly, she apologized to the president, the Russian president, for not being his mother. And her justification was that if she had been his mother, he would have had so much love in his life and be so loved that he would never have thought to invade another country. And I call that non-radical non-acceptance. It changes nothing. And the non-acceptance, it's still ignoring the way reality actually is. Life isn't lying to us. Life is telling us exactly what it's like. It's just we ignore it. And when we crave for life to be different, that exacerbates the ignoring. When we ignore, we crave more. So we've got to stop ignoring the way life is by ceasing to seek solutions. This will result in a lessening of fear and anxiety, which is what the question is asking. What we need to do is to, firstly, talk about why life is the way it is. So what we need to do is to telescope out to more of a widescreen view of existence and take on board the Buddha's teaching about the law of karma and rebirth. And when we do that, we discover that life is this endless flow, this endless process, and that the human realm is just one tiny little instance, one little bit of a diversion on that in that flow, and there's the whole of the rest of life that's gone unaccounted for. And what we tend to do in the human realm, understandably, completely understandably, is to focus exclusively on the human realm. When you take in rebirth and the law of karma into account, it shows us, firstly, that we're all just passing through. So let's not take things quite so seriously. We're all just passing through. You don't get to keep any of it. So there's no point trying to put your flag down and your territory down too hard, too much, and to be attached to anything in the scheme of things, because we're all just passing through. That's going to lead to a reduction in levels of fear and anxiety. Also, our actions have results. What we are today, where we are today, what we're experiencing today, is a result of all our past actions, and that's true for everyone. Where we end up depends on how we behave now. So if you want a little bit of prescience, want to know where you're going to be in the future, what your life's going to be like, check out how you behave. Check out your actions in body, speech, and mind. That'll tell you. And that's true of everyone. And it's true of the lowest, it's true of the highest, it's true of the people with all the power, and it's true of people with none of the power. Everyone is just passing through. One of the statements that the actress made about why she had written the poem was that her mission was to raise awareness about the changes needed within education systems to protect children and stop creating dictators, abusers, and bullies. Planet Earth, this scheme of things, is the education system. That's what we're doing here. That's what this lifetime is for. We've been sent back to school to learn some more lessons about how life works. It would be lovely if the whole world were full of Buddhists with Buddhist ideals and ambitions, but they're not. Lots of people have very different ideas about how the world should be, what it should look like, and how people should behave. And so it's inevitable that there are going to be all these clashes and concerns. If you take the time to consider all these points, if you take the time to consider that your actions have results and that you're here to learn about, that it's not, nothing here is set in stone, it's not supposed to be a certain way. It's a very fluid, flexible existence, the human realm, whereby you get to learn your lessons. We are all interconnected, so you will experience the be tossed around by other people's behaviours and so forth. But our primary task is to learn our lessons about what works and what doesn't work through experience, and then the results of the actions that we perform then direct our lives beyond this human realm. Again, if you take that on board and you work with it rather than against it, that sense of fear doesn't go away, and I'm going to come on to why we don't want fear to go away completely, we don't want anxiety to go away completely, but those concerns will be reduced because your attachments to the world, your clinging attachment to the world will reduce. So that's the wisdom part of the Noble Eightfold Path. So it behooves us, is that? You don't say that in the 21st century, do you? It behooves us to bear in mind that our actions have results, and we have the Buddha's mundane ethical teaching, which isn't that difficult to comprehend. If we act selfishly, pain and unwanted perceptions increase. If we behave relatively unselfishly, with generosity, kindness, thoughtfulness, harmlessness, then we experience much wanted perceptions and pleasant feelings. We have the precepts, including the first precept, which is to refrain from killing or harming living creatures. If we abide by that, we are not only reducing our levels of fear and anxiety, we're making the world a better place for people around us too. So yes, a bit more radicalizing for you. In praise of fear and anxiety and worry and going through agonies. So somebody knocked on my door to very kindly offer me un tazza de café yesterday, por favor. And so I'm learning Spanish at the moment. Sorry, Jose. I am actually learning Spanish at the moment. So badly, obviously, by the look on your face. And the question was put to me, why do you agonize over these lectures? They always seem to come out well. Well, they come out well because I agonize over them. You don't get out for now. Fear is a very useful quality. Fear is not the enemy. Fear is, if there were no such thing as human fear, we would not exist as a species, because we would have jumped down from the trees and the savannah. We'd have seen a big cat and gone, oh, hello, Mr. Cat. And we'd run over to play with the cat and we'd be eaten. So obviously other people looked at that and go, right, okay, note to self. We see something on the floor in the twilight, and it might be a rope or it might be a snake. We don't go, oh, I imagine it's probably a rope. we have the brainstem, limbic parts of our brain are telling us to place our priority on danger and threat, because that's the way we survive. So it's got utility. Fear is your friend. The problem with fear, though, is that it's uncomfortable. If fear was blissful, we would all leap into the lion enclosure at Longleat. See you later. We don't, because fear is very uncomfortable. And it has to be uncomfortable because it's giving us a message. It's just telling us to be careful. There might be a threat. Be mindful, be present, be in the moment. If I'm up a ladder, as I like to say, I want fear to be there. It's keeping me safe. So it's not the fear that's the problem, it's our relationship to it. And it's the way in which we grasp after, we cling to the fear, because we're trying to get rid of the unpleasantness. We don't want the unpleasantness, and we cling to it. We cling to it as being me, mine, myself. And that's extraordinarily painful. And what does it result in? It results in an increased perception of threat. So that's why people get stuck on the ladder. Now, you want to cling to the ladder, but you don't want to cling to the fear. That's quite funny, actually. Thought that'd get a laugh. But, oh, okay, never mind. So what we want to do is to go through this process that Frank Herbert talked about. This is where we want to raise some mindfulness. The Buddha, there's a sutta called Fear and Dread, and the Buddha talks about this very issue. And somebody asks him, you know, how it is that the monks can go out and spend time in the most remote and apparently dangerous places and meditate. And he says, well, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, you know, they keep precepts really, really well. They look after their minds really well. They don't allow unskillful thoughts to arise. They're generous and kind to their fellow monks. They live a really properly strict ethical life. And as a consequence, they're able to go to these remote and dangerous places with greater assurance. So you're able to go to these places with greater assurance because of the way that you behave. And he then goes on to talk about how when he was in training, before he became the Buddha, he would deliberately take himself to the most remote, dangerous, crazy, scary places and stay there and meditate there. And what he was talking about was developing this capacity to allow for fear to arise. So if you're in some lonely forest, at some lonely forest shrine in the middle of the night, and you're practicing walking meditation, and you hear a twig snap or some such thing, fear arises quite naturally, potential threat. And what he would do was, if he was walking, he would continue to walk. If he was sitting, he would continue to sit. If he was lying down, he would continue to lie down. If he was just standing, he would continue to just stand. What do we do when fear's upon us? Do we remain in the same posture? No, I run about like a lunatic. I don't know about anyone else. So, developing mindfulness, letting life unfold, experiencing fear, knowing that fear is an important component that helps keep us safe and alive, and then investigating, exploring what this fear is, allowing it to arise, allowing it to pass through us. It's what Frank Herbert was saying in the Litany Against Fear. Let the process unfold. Let it happen without changing. And what you discover is the fear emerges, it rises, it takes hold, and it tells you a story. And that narrative defines your reality. So if you're in the forest, at a lonely shrine in the middle of the night and you hear a twig, it has to be a tiger, doesn't it? It just absolutely has to be a tiger, because that's how the mind works. So you don't change. You carry on with your mindfulness and you let that whole experience pass through you. And if you're noting it as fear and you're noting the discomfort, you're noting the strong urge to run or lie down or or stand or just change your posture. This is the radical bit. You just let that happen. What happens? It all passes away again. It all settles down again. If you react to it, if you build on it, you're constantly redefining the perception. You're escalating the perception. You're making your world an extraordinarily frightening place at that time. But if you allow, if you learn to mindfully acknowledge what is actually taking place, which is what we're doing when we're meditating, we're learning to allow and acknowledge what comes up, it passes through. What happens? Exactly, nothing. Yeah, I think that's what I was trying to say. Yeah, tackle it. Tackle fear head on. Invite it. Allow it. That's radical. That's not what most people do. But that's what following this path will give you. And what happens is the outcomes, you discover that the fear narrative no longer defines your reality. So if I'm up the ladder and fear is upon me, I can't move because the fear is I'm going to hit the floor, I'm going to hit the ground and bash my head. And I recognize that and I acknowledge that and I let that happen. It passes away. And then my reality is, do you know what? I think I can go up and down this ladder now. In fact, I think I can do it quite comfortably. As long as I'm mindful, as long as I'm paying attention, I can do this. And what you find is there's this delightful payback, which is you are suddenly energized. There's this sense of energy. There's this sense of thrill, probably not, because I'm probably cleaning windows. So that's not a thrill thing, is it? But there's this sense of ease and ability, this freedom to go up and down the ladder as I see fit. So that's one of the paybacks, is you're no longer defining the experience through the fear. And in the absence of fear, there's a possibility of concentration arising. With any of the hindrances, with any hindering kind of thought, if we go through this process, this radical process of allowing and flowing with rather than trying to control and force, in the absence of all that resistance, there is the possibility of this delightful absorption arising and concentration arising. And there is a sense of ease and a sense of freedom that comes in the absence of states like fear. So the radical response is to invite the fear. We don't have to try very hard. All we have to do is turn on the telly, go online, and you can have as much fear thrust in your direction as you wish. Somebody did point out, actually, because I've often been scathing about how the media is keeping us in a state of fear. But somebody pointed out that it's this thing of that we tend towards the fearful things, we tend towards the threats, precisely for the very same reason. It's a part of the survival mechanism. So really the media is only just replicating that survival mechanism, really. So that's how you lessen it. You radicalize. You become radically harmless. There is more, though. There is more if you want to get even more radical, which is you can, with a concentrated mind, with a settled mind, with a mind free of hindrances, you can turn your attention back to this flow of conscious experience. You can note the sounds, the tastes, the touches, the smells, the thoughts, the feelings, the perceptions, the tactile sensations, whatever it is that arises. You learn to note it, to observe it. This is a deeply radical approach to life. And the more you do that, the deeper your wisdom into just how transient and impersonally conditioned the experience actually is. And you start to really appreciate what the Buddha meant by condition-dependent origination, what he meant by the wheel of samsara. You gain this deep appreciation of the fact that every component of experience is simply arising and passing away. In fact, to say there is a flow of experience is an abstraction. There is literally, you're not moving anywhere, you're nowhere. You're here now, which is nowhere, and perceptions are arising and passing away, and thoughts are arising and passing away, feelings are arising and passing away. Your whole comprehension and understanding of existence is transformed simply by paying exquisite attention to what's unfolding. And you discover through that that you understand the process by which rebirth takes place. You know, there's always the elephant in the room when it comes to rebirth, which is, well, how do we know that's true? You discover it simply by attending to your experience. There is this unbroken flux of experience arising and passing away. That's what this is. And we conceptualize it and make sense of it, and then we get this sense of time and space and movement. And the more you dig in deeply, practicing Vipassana meditation, the more deeply you go into each component. And I know it makes people frightened. It's the very idea that maybe life isn't the concrete, solid thing that you thought it was, but the discovery of emptiness is utterly liberating, absolutely liberating. It frees you from all attachment to the conditioned universe. It doesn't mean that there will never be fears arising, but the fears that arise are due to the survival mechanisms which are built in. And there's nothing wrong with those. If I'm up a ladder, I want there to be some fear there. It doesn't mean that somebody doesn't understand the true nature of reality. Is there clinging? Is there grasping? Is there attachment to the arising of any of these component parts of experience? Where there is, there will be psychological fear. Where there is no attachment, there'll be this wonderful sense of freedom and a comprehensive understanding of why life is the way it is. The world has to be the way it is, because this is where people come to learn all their lessons. So the question is, why don't human beings seem to learn the lessons? Why do these wars keep on happening? Well, I put it to you that there are some people who do learn the lessons and they don't come back. So they don't have to go through these iterations again. And that's what the Buddha's teaching will give you. It will give you the freedom never to have to come back to this school ever again. See? Where there is no attachment, no fear can arise. All that remains is mystery. I know it's a work of fiction, but the book Dune is really good. I love it. There's another quote that's just, I just love this quote, so I'll end it with this, because it just chimes with me so completely. The mystery of life isn't a problem to solve, but a reality to experience. A process that cannot be understood by stopping it. We must move with the flow of the process. We must join it. We must flow with it. Thank you.